I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. At Lighthouse, we're celebrating 21 years in business and just entering our eighth year doing this program. We have a few exciting changes that have taken place. First, with our new 2015 open line format that comes with our launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the Publication and Events tab, and you can go back all throughout the different years of all the topics we've covered and pull them up. Plus, we have a new book this year that was launched, Cracking the Business Code. It's available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is millennials. I'm going to call you guys Generation M, by the way, so I don't do a tongue-twisting thing. How to attract, retain, and manage. I'm really excited about this program today, as all of them. But this is a very special one to me because we're doing a panel discussion with some amazing individuals. Each of these guys are just over the top, I got to tell you. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into this huge topic. Everything we do at Lighthouse goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to help raise the hiring bar. We are growing globally. Matter of fact, we just opened an office earlier this year in Taiwan. So if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S.-based company, please let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to the calls we get from clients and friends, association members, from people both domestically and globally, and we want to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today, and that's what has driven this particular topic. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So during the program, please write down two or three questions you can either send in during the program in the chat box or ask once we open up the line. I want to introduce our special guests, and unfortunately, Bahavna wasn't able to join.
Dana, can you hear me?
Oh, you're there.
I'm here,
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yep.
Okay. Perfect. I'm glad that worked out.
Yeah.
Let me introduce you. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, by the way?
Yeah, Bhavna. That's just
Bhavna.
About right.
Okay, thank you. Bhavna writes and speaks on millennials in corporate America and serves as a consultant and thought partner for established leadership coaches. She's connected to the conscious capitalism movement and has partnered with the conscious business firm Excellence, as well as business-based leadership consulting firm LRN. Earlier in her career, she worked in finance and Wall Street for UBS and in tech consulting in Silicon Valley for Oracle. She's a graduate of Columbia University, where she also played D1 basketball. I'd also like to introduce Colin Kopp. Colin is a social entrepreneur, marketer, and growth hacker. Now, we're not going to go into the hacker part, Colin, if that's okay. But a growth hacker. He serves as a director of marketing for Soma. Soma makes sustainable plant-based filters that make water healthy and delicious with beautifully designed carafes and pitchers. Previously, Colin led paid media at Gary LSF, a top 25 independent digital agency in the U.S. As an early employee, he helped grow Gary LSF, previously it was called Meltwater Reach, from $1 million to $40 million in managed annualized spend. That's a huge growth. Named in SF Egotist 32 Under 32 Marketing and Advertising in 2014, his campaigns have been featured in Business Insider, Wired, Refinery 29, Yahoo, and Fast Company. Colin's a regular speaker and writer for the Google Partner Community. Jessica Phillips. Jessica is an associate social publicist at 360i, where she helps brands amplify marketing campaigns by marketing with digital influencers and tapping brand advocates, just like we were talking about. She works with clients across a wide variety of fields, including entertainment and the auto industry. Earlier in her career, she worked exclusively in entertainment and more traditional online publicity. She's bicoastal, growing up in Los Angeles, beautiful Malibu, and a graduate of NYU, and is now living in the Big Apple. Finally, Jason Whittington started as a marketing intern at Quest Software after graduating from Cal State Fullerton with a business and marketing degree. He has worn many hats within marketing that span from content creation, social media, events, and SEO. QuestSoft was bought by Dell, and Jason was promoted as a campaign manager to manage all marketing efforts for their data protection product. I feel privileged to have each of you with us today, and this is going to be a very exciting time to share ideas with our audience and to prepare people for dealing with the opportunity to work with this, your generation. Also, before we start, our registration for our next program begins at the end of today's program. The topic will be presented by Larry Cassidy. Some of you knew Larry. He's been a Visage chair for many, many years and very senior and lots of wisdom in the ideas he presents. His topic will be building and retaining your all-star team, 5 do's and 5 don'ts. And when Larry mentions do's and don'ts, everybody should be paying attention. So I want to welcome you guys to our program. The way this is going to work, so everyone understands in the audience, we're going to throw out some questions here, and everybody will have an opportunity to share, and then we're going to move to the next slide. So whoever's moving the slides, let me take control, which would be really great. So question is to you guys, what makes your generation different from others, including Gen Z, if there's a difference? And the second thing, the biggest misnomer about millennials. See, I'm going to go Generation M, so I don't tongue twist. So who wants to go first?
I can kick us off. This is Colin here. I think, for Gen Y, we have a couple like key things that really make us unique. I think, one is job flexibility for a lot of us. We're much more concerned with being able to work during kind of our peak performance hours. So job flexibility is a big one. I think overall, kind of just recognition overall, our generation has been kind of groomed and accustomed to being patted on the back, so to speak, for a lot of their, accomplishments growing up. So recognition programs. Something else that comes to mind when I think about Generation Y, professional and personal growth opportunity is another one that I was thinking through and is really important. I think the Generation Y in particular is just really being keyed in on, what the future looks like for them within the company, how they're going to grow and fast track to success. I think that's a big one. And just as far as, Generation Z is concerned, I think, it's a pretty different audience. With them, they're, always connected is kind of the thing that comes to mind for us, and I think they're going to be highly, highly efficient and kind of network in a very different way. First thing that comes to mind from a Generation Z perspective with regard to recruitment is I've actually just been kind of text messaging back and forth with a few candidates for a position that I'm hiring with at my current company, and so that's a very different way in which you would communicate with somebody in that in that generation versus somebody who's a Gen Yer or kind of from the Gen X generation. So that's a little bit about that. And I think in terms of the biggest misnomer to answer your question, Dana, I think a couple things come to mind, but, for millennials, they can often be pegged as, self-centered and individualistic, where, they just, I think you can think almost of the iPad commercials where you have, the Generation Yers with the headphones in, so to speak, and being individualistic. But I think a big, big characteristic of our generation, as well as that they're really concerned about doing good. You see a lot of companies growing out of the Gen Y generation where they're, you know, focused on social enterprise, giving back and doing good. So that's one that I think is a big misnomer about millennials.
Okay. Thank you. Who else would like to share?
I'll go. Hey guys, this is Jessica. In terms of a big defining factor, I think, for our generation, especially in differentiation to Gen Z, is that just in the sense of growing up, is as a millennial, we got introduced to technology. So we weren't born with iPods and iPads right away. Like, I remember a time without Google and when Ask Jeeves was a big thing, whereas this next generation, that's a foreign concept to not have immediate connectivity. And although I'm used to connectivity, I definitely understand the process where it's not always there and it's not always as inherent, which becomes a problem marketing and working with millennials. And I'm just going to assume with Gen Z is kind of that idea of we like having everything at our fingertips because that's what we're most used to. And like even today, my Wi-Fi is out in my company and we all left and went to go work from home and we're a digital agency. So it's kind of funny and ironic, but we didn't know what to do without having access to our server and to our internet. It definitely changes things and it's a different way in how we work and connect with the world. In terms of a big misnomer, I agree wholeheartedly with what was said before in the sense that we are seen as being selfish and lazy, and that's definitely not always the case. And a lot of times that idea that we grew up with the pat on the back and all the honorary awards makes people think that we constantly need praise. But I think it's more that people enjoy recognition for when they do good work. And we want to make sure that the work we're doing is serving a greater purpose and not just biding time until something possibly will help us further our education and our career.
Great. Thank you. Bhavna?
Yeah. For the first one, I would say I think our definition of success is a little bit less rooted than previous generations and more variable. I think our generation, some people view it as seeing the world, some as raising a family, some as reaching their potential in their career. I think that at the confluence of like what we look for, probably meaning, purpose, connectivity, action, progress, but the way we reach success using those, I think, is very variable. And then for misnomer, I've heard that we're lazy or that we don't care, that we have an apathy for professional life or that we're difficult to motivate. And I think it's just that our motivation is very intrinsic, and those intrinsic things need to be activated around us for us to really show up and give our fullest to the company we're working for. And, I would just say meaning, purpose, and an ability to develop ourselves within the company and in our job.
Does that come from during the interview process, attempting to find out what the trigger would be to motivate, to excite and engage?
Can you repeat that?
So do you think it's up to the employer then to try to find where that magic button is that would excite each individual?
I don't think so. I think generally all of us look for like a real sense of purpose to the organization that we're going to work for. So if the culture is vibrant and people within it are all working towards like a common vision and goal, I feel like that's exciting to like a number of us.
Okay. Jason, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, these are all great points, and really they kind of nail the head here. I would definitely say what makes our generation different is, I mean, we definitely want that purpose, right? We want to feel like we're making an impact in the world more than just working for that company. So it kind of goes back to what I was saying before we kind of started here is instead of a company talking to people, but people talking to people, I think we also want that within the work environment where we want to feel more not so much towards like the big company style, but more of like the smaller personal ma and pa, where we can feel like we're making more of an impact within not just the company, but maybe society or community. And then definitely with the the misnomer about millennials. I mean, everybody was saying this is that, you know, we're labeled as lazy. And, yeah, there are people out there just sit on the couch and play video games all day. But, you know, I think that when given the opportunity, we work really hard. And we want to prove that we're not lazy.
That laziness does not go with you guys. None of you guys are lazy. Segues into a nice question here that came in on the chat box before we go to the next slide. How does an employer gain loyalty from Gen Y and Z employees?
I can kind of take a stab at that right now. This is Jessica. I find for me that my loyalty, it's hard to say to gain loyalty per se. And going back to what was said before when we were talking about our generation, and the biggest misnomer is that we want to do good in the world, whether or not that's through our job or through extracurriculars and volunteering or whatever it may be. And so in terms of loyalty, we want to make sure our work constantly has a purpose. So busy work is an unfortunate side effect of life and of working. But when your day-to-day becomes constant busy work and you don't understand why, you know, what you're doing and how that fits into the big picture and what kind of difference that makes, it gets really difficult to want to stay and do that, especially if you don't understand where that light at the end of the tunnel is. So I definitely believe that understanding what you're doing and how it fits into the bigger picture, as well as understanding your projected path, whether or not it's going to stay that way or it's set in stone, is completely up to the company and to the employee as well as the employer. But just to kind of know that you're not just doing grunt work or busy work for the hell of it, and as well as keeping an open culture that, at least for me and my perspective, sitting in an office by myself or in a cubicle, I would get nothing done because that's just not how I work. But again, that's a personal thing. I like an open culture, a more lively setting, something where you know everyone's working together and working towards something.
Towards a cause. Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? We'll just take one more person, then we're going to move on. Okay. You covered it very nicely, Jessica. So let's go to the next slide. How do you want other generations to interact with you, and what does your generation need to do in order to interact with others? Talk about it. Yin and yang, huh? Any
this
thoughts
Jason.
On that?
Yeah, I think it comes down to a mutual respect for each other. I think someone said, you know, like technology, like we have an understanding of technology a little bit more than maybe someone a little bit more senior, but they have more work experience, right? So we come in blazing with these great ideas of, you know, how to take the company to the next level, the future, and we kind of say, you know, you might have the more wisdom, but, you know, we're coming in with these great ideas and we kind of shut down the greater wisdom, right? But then they come and shut us down for our great innovation. And I think just having a mutual respect for the wisdom and the new ventures and opportunities that a young person can bring into a company, I think, is huge within communication within a company.
That's great. Thank you. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Sure. I also think there's something to be said about just like kind of bouncing off of that, just really open communication and feedback and understanding that times are changing and we have a lot to learn as well. I'm 24. I am by no means perfect or a seasoned person in the workforce. However, I do have ideas and I want to learn. And so understanding that, okay, maybe twice a year reviews aren't the best way to go anymore, and what kind of open communication, like was being said, can we discuss as a whole, as a manager to an employee or even like a mentor to a mentee, whatever it may be, is that where can the lines be opened just a bit further to make that easier.
Cool. Beth, anything, thoughts?
I can take a shot at the second one.
Sure.
So I feel like I have some friends who haven't fully practiced engaging in fruitful dialogues with their supervisors. So I feel like our generation, sometimes we're a little bit scared or think it will make no difference to fully stand up for ourselves and what we believe in. And part of it goes back to the previous question, and maybe we've experienced our ideas being treated as small or something. But I would say instead of kind of running out the door when things don't seem to be working, we can give it a full chance and see things through more. We can be change makers rather than, not trying fully. And I think we can be bold and own our truths and not believe the negative narratives and make ourselves smaller as a result. So I think we can take some power back in that.
Huh. And you help companies to learn how to do that, to interface. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Anybody else have any thoughts on this? You guys covered it pretty well. Okay, let's go to the next question. What are three things that you would like companies to offer that you don't see right now? So offering can be for attracting, to get you guys to work there, or engagement.
This is Jason. That's a funny question. I mean, free food, of course. I mean, who doesn't like free food? but on all seriousness, I think, when I was working at Dell, we had a very flexible work schedule, and I also had the flexibility to work from home whenever I wanted to. Now, me being me, I love the people, and I love interacting with people, so I would only work from home, say, like once a week. But just having that flexibility of being able to work from home and having that option, I think that's really helpful and something that I think more companies are starting to move towards, especially because it cuts down on the overhead costs. But, it also it helps give that flexibility to kind of balance that work and the work and pleasure life.
Okay. Now, also, Jason, I know when you, at Dell and a number of other companies, the way they, instead of having to go into the brick-and-mortar building, that the same vibe can take place through video or just conference calls on a regular basis. Is that correct?
There's definitely a power to being face-to-face with somebody. And even through video or through just phone chats, things, there's delays, there's some things that you just can't get from being in a room with a group of people locked in, sweating it out together, brainstorming. So I think that you can do business that way, and it's very efficient for sure. But I still think that the classic people in front of people interacting is probably the most effective way, to, in my opinion, to get things done.
Okay. So finding some balance there, it sounds like.
Right.
What do the rest of you guys think?
This is Colin here. A couple things that I don't see very, very frequently. The first one that we're actually getting ready to implement in our company is a work from anywhere week, where we basically pick one week every quarter, and we all go travel, and we're going to be on and basically assume that we're going to have 80% productive week, compared to a normal week. So I think that, is really a cool concept, which allows, people to either go travel back home to be with their family, have a little extra time, especially in the startup world where, people don't take hardly any time off. And just to see the world and to work from, new cultures, new environments. That's one. I would say, more of a focus as well on just allowing people to work on special projects. I've heard of companies giving 10% time to work on special projects. So I think that's a great thing that can really allow people to feel like they're an internal entrepreneur, and they're able to flex kind of that creative energy that they have to really do things that inspire them and, use the gifts that they have to kind of drive the company forward. And the last thing that I would say is just consider a different work week schedule. You know, I've been thinking a lot about like the 4-day work week and what that might be like for companies, and just how, you know, our hours have been here and how much, you know, the extra hours doesn't necessarily equate to extra productivity. And so the 4-day concept could be really interesting to consider as something to offer, since it typically does require about 24 hours to, you know, fully disconnect, where you're able to like really relax and have, you know, that time off. So those are the three things on my end.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any thoughts on this topic? Okay. How about you guys can share some tips for managing your generation, do's and don'ts?
I can kind of take a stab at this. For a big do for me, and it was brought up earlier, is just a lot of open communication and feedback. And granted, it depends on the individual, but I like having the fact that I have one-on-ones with my manager every week, and whether or not it's just a random check-in to be like, hey, how's your workload, or if it's like, okay, let's make sure we're doing this better or this more efficiently, or let's see if we can put you on more projects that spark your interest. It gives me a peace of mind that my manager not only knows what I'm doing, but is taking an interest in it as well and making sure that I'm progressing in my career and not just staying stagnant, which I think is fantastic. And then at the same token, same time, there's also something to be said about having a manager who will give you that feedback, but also let you take risks and let you try things that you may not think you're ready for, but if you never try, you'll never know. So I think that's kind of two big tips that I appreciate.
Well, that's great. Who else would like to share?
I think one thing, this is Colin again, one thing that makes our generation a little bit unique is I think we've become okay with trying, you know, just trying and failing and kind of leaning on that to feel okay. Like, you know, we tried our best and letting that be some sort of metric for success. And so I think that, you know, when you manage our generation, you need to really manage to that and like, certainly reward kind of going big and trying and failing, but, you know, at the same time, you need to be super, you know, results and goal-oriented and make sure that, you know, as a business, you guys are aligned to, you know, hitting the objectives that you set out.
Sorry, this is Jessica again. There's also something to be said about, along that line, like letting us try and fail, and is about letting us work in a way that works for us. I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this. For me, I've got the attention span of a gnat. Like, I do three things at once, and it all gets done somehow, some way. And my parents used to laugh at me because they never understood how I got my homework done, because I would be, like, reading a book for school, reading a book that I wanted to read, have music blasting on in the background, be, like, dancing around my room. There's no way things should have gotten done, and yet it all did. And graduated with honors, so I made it out. So just because I know that sometimes, like, when you see television shows or there's like old commercials where it's like the person in the cubicle hiding all their tabs on the screen because it's like not work related, and yet sometimes that helps get work done, is taking those little breaks or being on social media for a little bit of a time, and that it's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't mean you're slacking off. It just means you're multitasking to some extent.
Okay. And at the end of the day, as long as it's getting done, what does it matter?
Right. And there's also something to be said about it depends on an individual, because I know I'm different than some of my coworkers who are like, I need it to be quiet. I need to, like, not hear people. And then there's a bunch of us who are, like, talking all day and who feed off of other energy. Like, if it's too quiet, I don't get work done. So, again, it's kind of an individual thing, but I find it across the board more for at least the coworker, for, like, my coworkers my age, that we don't mind a little bit of distraction now and then, but then there's others who are my age who do really well in, like, quiet conference rooms.
We've had a number of questions come in here. You guys, look what you guys have generated. So I'm going to throw out a couple questions, and we'll move through these and then keep going with the program. Do you feel the same things that you guys are just talking about apply to hourly worker bees as opposed to those on a professional path? What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think it depends, again, on the type of setting and whether or not, depending on what the hourly is. Are we talking, like, working in a restaurant or working, like, contracted as a freelancer? So I think a lot of it depends on the setting as well as what you're looking for the outcome to be.
Okay. Good point. Good point. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is Jason. I think it really just comes down to if you give them praise and feedback and opportunities to grow and help them grow. It really doesn't matter what the position is, hourly or salaried. I think as long as that's there, you'll see that drive to want to work hard.
Okay. And Jason, you came in originally to one of the positions as a contract, and they liked what you did so much, they brought you in full time. So did you feel a difference from contract to full time?
I definitely felt a little bit more included. I think as companies view contractors, it's temporary. You're here for a couple projects. You're not fully integrated or included within the company. So, you know, maybe that's something to think about is how do we integrate them to make them feel like they're part of the family?
Okay. That's good. Good. Another question came in. What successes have you guys seen with career development programs based on whatever experience you've had so far? And on the other spectrum, have experienced something in a career development program that didn't work well, and why?
I can talk about one that I feel like did work well.
Sure.
This is Bhavna. I was working with a firm, and one particular team in the firm chose to develop their own program, and they identified certain core competencies within that team, like things that everyone on that team had to be able to do, and then certain other ones that the team was looking to grow in. And then each person would kind of identify which core areas they wanted to focus on and where they felt they were at that time. And then certain elective ones where they also wanted to either grow in or that they wanted to make one of their main focuses. And then after they identified where they felt they were, they would check in with others on the team and see if that was, in fact, what everyone else thought as well. And then throughout the process, there was kind of a foundation laid down for how people were going to progress from one certain area to the next within each competency. And there was a system of checking in with the entire team also regularly.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Any other thoughts on that topic?
This is Jason again. I think a mentorship program is extremely valuable. I had a mentor working through Dell, and just to be able to bounce off ideas or to go back to someone and do some brainstorming or sit down with them on a weekly basis one-on-one to discuss business opportunities and growth opportunities and just learn and pick their brain. I think that's extremely helpful and a really big part of growing within a company. And I think that an encouragement also to get a mentor outside of the company, so basically have two mentors, one within and one without, is something that would be cool to have provided or guided towards.
So it goes back. Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, please. Sure.
Oh, I was just going to piggyback off that. Something our CEO said, which really resonated with me as well, is that in addition to a mentor, is to have an advocate. Is that somebody who's not afraid to speak up on your behalf. So whether or not it's your peer or somebody who is a level above you or many levels above you, it's just when somebody who isn't afraid to sing your praises and to kind of help you know how to sing your own as well. So not necessarily somebody teaching you how to forge your way, but a buddy system to kind of make sure your voice gets heard.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah.
Let's take one more question. So the support, this sounds like something that all generations should be embracing. So these are great ideas for everybody. I'm going to take one more question here, then we're going to move on. Allowing employees to experiment and fail is difficult for a generation of managers, which was raised where failure equated to termination. How would you advise a manager to become more comfortable with this approach? Great question.
I think an easy way in would to be to let people experiment with that with smaller projects, not maybe not as pressing deadlines, not that, you know, something that's not going to blow up if it fails miserably and where you're scrambling at the last second to fix it. You know, starting with little things, with personal projects, with more internal issues rather than client-facing, depending on your company, and then growing it to understanding to seeing how trying big can have big rewards. There's always a risk.
Good. Okay, baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
Building trust. Any other thoughts on that topic? Okay, I covered it pretty well. Let's go on to the next slide. Great questions, by the way, that are coming in. So, a couple questions here. What are some ideas for keeping you engaged for long-term retention, the myth and reality? How important are passion and purposeful meaning in the workplace, which we've covered a little bit before? And do you guys have side jobs or passion projects, or does the one job keep you content? I'm going to throw in a fourth. How do companies attract you guys, so you'll want to work for them? You'll be knocking on their door. I want to come work for you. Go at it. Can't wait to hear.
Well, sorry. I feel like I've jumped in first a lot of these times, but I actually have two jobs. Besides my job at 360i, I also coach gymnastics, and it's a passion job for me. It's been something in my life forever that I'm not willing to give up yet. So definitely find that passion and purpose are big deals for me. And even my company, it has three pillars of passion, purpose, and perseverance. So everything we do there should have some aspect of those three pillars going for it. They never want us to settle, to think that we're not doing enough, that we're not passionate about our work. So I think they're really important in the workplace, especially now when there's so much going on in the world and everyone has so many different interests, and you can have the world at your fingertips with a cell phone, with a computer, you know, Google Glasses, for crying out loud. You can have it right there, then and there. So to be doing something you don't believe in and you're not passionate about just seems sort of silly when there's so many other things out there.
Perfect. What are some other thoughts?
I would say I think we tend to compartmentalize a little bit less. For us, it's not really like passion in the workplace and then outside is something different. I think it's just like we live a passionate, purposeful life, and our job and what we do outside of it are a part of that. So I would say I have side jobs and passions, but it's not really a factor of whether I'm content with my work or not. It's just that I have a variety of interests and I have the energy to pursue them, and it's kind of a factor of personal development and right now having the energy and the time, being younger and not having a family and that kind of thing.
Okay. And what would attract you guys to an organization? It's tough. There are a lot of positions out there. Companies are desperate to find wonderful, great people like you guys. How do they attract you? What works?
This is Colin here. I think, you know, the biggest thing is sort of their why, the mission, for me and for our generation. You know, just if you can really get bought into, like, you know, what they're doing that is so different and so innovative, and the culture that they foster, you can kind of get a really good feeling of that just by talking to the team members and the energy and the space. You can feel, you know, when people are really bought in and inspired to make something that's really great. So I think, you know, it first has to do with the mission, and then really, you know, getting a feel for, like, how you would make a tremendous impact, like that you're going to come in there and be someone who's going to, you know, lay the groundwork for something that could be very, 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 very big, and that will have, you know, big impact in a broader way than just financial. So that's what
I'm
thinking.
How do they find you guys?
Through, well, for, I guess on my end, I think oftentimes it can be through just network of connections for us, and maybe in San Francisco it's different than other places. It's becoming less and less so like on LinkedIn and Craigslist or whatever it is. It's become more so through, you know, people, and like you have to meet this person. You know, I know what you're doing and your purpose, and I know that that resonates so closely with this person that, you know, is a dear friend of mine. So it's a lot more so through, I think, you know, the network connections and personal relationships that you have nowadays.
Okay. So good old-fashioned networking.
Yeah, it tends to work. However, I also do use LinkedIn and I found my first job that way. And, you know, it sort of sucks when you are shooting a letter into the void when you apply online to places. But though I find that the places I apply to online are the ones that I really wanted to work at, because I was willing to shoot a letter to the void and be like, I don't know anybody who knows somebody here, but I want to be here and I want to make it work. So a lot of postings as well as networking. And I also think when you're targeting like new hires going through colleges are great, because it tends to be where they're hungry. I know I right out of school I was, and still am, but it's helpful.
Okay. And where do you guys suggest for companies to do postings?
LinkedIn was one of my favorites, as well as Indeed and entertainmentcareers.net, but that was when I was solely in entertainment, so that one's a little niche.
Okay. Bhavna, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's some other like smaller, more curated sites now, like The Muse, that post about companies with, I guess, attractive cultures for millennials, and they profile them. So if you could get your company on there, I think you'd probably see a boost in the people you're attracting.
Ooh, okay, good. Jason, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like LinkedIn. It's an easy way to connect with people and start a conversation, even if you're not specifically looking for a job, but just doing research on companies. I think that's a great way to start.
Okay. So what would you guys do? Let's say, how would a company find you on LinkedIn? What keywords would you suggest somebody do, or what would you want a company to do to say, so you might go, ooh, or it somehow gets your attention and gets you guys connected?
This is Colin here, and I don't know if I can speak specifically to LinkedIn. I think some great companies have been really innovative and been able to find some great young talent through Instagram and Facebook advertising as well, where you can target based on, you know, things that people like, job title, you know, words that they've used in the past that may relate to the role that you're looking for. So I think, you know, overall, when you're trying to target, you know, the younger generation, I think you can get even deeper into a lot of the psychographic data that may be important in terms of like the why and the purpose when you're going through, you know, one of those other sites. And it may be less like intent driven, where someone is like directly looking for a specific role, but at the same time, I think you can find some of the best talent when they're not necessarily looking for it, but they're just so inspired by, you know, the mission and the calling of your business.
Okay, that's cool. Okay, mission and calling. But, Ravna, there was a question just came in. Can you mention the names of the organizations again that you just mentioned?
Oh, it's called The Muse, M-U-S-E. That's one of the websites.
Okay. Was there another one?
There are a few, but that's the first one that came to mind. I can let you guys know if you want later.
Great. And you guys, if you have questions, anybody listening today or on the program, the contact information is available for each individual. Let's keep going here. Got a couple more questions for you guys. If a company were to define work hours, what would you prefer? Colin brought this up earlier. So how about the rest of you?
This is Jason. I mean, I don't mind the typical, like, 8 to 5, 8 to 4 work schedule, but the opportunity to, like I kind of mentioned this before, to work from home So if, say, you want to put 4 hours in, 4 or 5, 6 hours in one day, and then, you know, go home, hit the gym or whatever, and then come home and finish out your work day in the evening, I just think having that flexible work hours, as long as the work is getting done and it's top-grade work, you know, I think that would be preferred.
I agree. There is something nice, though, about having sort of set hours. Like, I work 9 to 6, essentially, that, you know, booking meetings isn't too difficult if it needs to be done. You know when people should be around. But, again, we're pretty flexible, and I appreciate it, as well as, I think Colin said this earlier, if there could ever be a 4-day work week, sign me up, because that would be phenomenal.
Okay.
And to piggyback off what both Jason and Jessica were saying, this is Colin again. I think it's going to be really key in the coming years to just allow people to work in their peak performance state, and that is so different for every single person. So I think one of the approaches that we're taking, you know, at Soma is just like trying to find that 50% to 60%. Time of overlap where it's just understood these are the ranges in which you can expect people to be online, you can expect to connect. But outside of that, you know, if you're going to be a night owl and that's when you have, you know, your greatest creativity and productivity, great. If you're, you know, want to get going at 5:30 a.m., perfect. So I think we just, you know, in the future, it'll be super important to just allow people to work around their peak performance state. And you know, it gets so bummed out seeing people like, you know, slouching in their chair at work for hours and probably just getting very minimal work done. So I think it's a key thing to think about.
Okay. That's really great. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Two more topics, and then we're going to open up the line for everybody. Who are your leadership or business heroes, and who do you look up to and aspire to be like? All's quiet.
This is Colin again. I'm happy to kick it off. A few, I guess, people that I look up to, I would say from a leadership standpoint, Tony Robbins, I think is a really big one in terms of like really being able to get the most out of your personal potential. He's somebody that certainly inspires me. Tony Hsieh from Zappos, the former founder and CEO of Zappos, I think he's really inspired me from a leadership business standpoint with regard to creating company culture. And another one I'd say is maybe Elon Musk, just in terms of his pure audacity that he has from a business standpoint to just be that audacious and that innovative is extremely inspiring. And outside of that, in terms of like, you know, who I look up to and aspire to be like, I think first and foremost, I just want to be the best version of me. And that may sound like a cliche answer, but, you know, I want to not really be a lesser version of anybody. You know, I certainly want to make sure that I'm just the best version of me. And I think more so than any of the big names, I look up often to, you know, people that are close in my network and just have characteristics that I aspire to. One thing that I've shared with a few people is I actually have a screensaver on my phone. It's like a tile of 9 different photos of people in my life, and each one of them has a characteristic that inspires me and something that I want to incorporate to make me a better person. And so I think, you know, I actually think a lot less of or get inspired a lot less by people that are, you know, super far from me and really think a lot closer about, you know, characteristics of people that I love and really move me. And then just, you know, aspire to be the biggest version of myself.
That's great. Thank you, Colin. What about the rest of you? Bhavna.
Yeah, sure. I didn't want to go after him because my answer was actually really similar. Tony Hsieh, I don't quite know how to say his last name, but also Tony Robbins. I think Jeff Weiner has done a lot of really great things for LinkedIn as a leader. And then for who I look up to, it's also trying to be the best version of myself, but then there's also countless inspirations I find around me of people who are doing things the way I would also like to in certain areas. And, yeah, I mean, same thing basically.
Okay. Jason, anything to add to that?
I think that I definitely look up to people that are able to step out of the norm and do something great. So, I mean, you look at people like Michael Dell, Steve Jobs, these guys, right? I mean, Michael Dell, he's known for not finishing college. He started this company out of his dorm, and he created this major empire. You know, it's stepping out of that norm of what you think business is supposed to be and how you're supposed to get there, and breaking those boundaries.
Okay. Thank you. Jessica?
All right. You know, my answers are really similar, but a lot of the people that I look up to are actually my friends. They're some of the most driven, hardworking people I know, and I tend to be very competitive, and so looking up to them and aspiring to be like them and to work with them eventually one day, it kind of helps fuel me and drives me to go further in my career and to be the best person I can be, whether career-wise or just in life.
Okay. Once again, I don't hear any laziness in this conversation. And the other cool thing is everybody talks about for different generations, and there's a lot of articles, but I don't know any other organizations had a panel like this. That's what drove this. I thought it'd be really cool. Question came in. Several of you have mentioned a four-day work week and a flexible schedule as attractive attributes of a potential employer. How important is money? And would you accept less compensation for these types of benefits?
Colin here. I think, you know, money is less important nowadays as it is to previous generations. I think we're much more comfortable taking a little bit less than we need. And I think millennials in general, they just buy less, but buy, you know, nicer things. They'll buy things that they really care about. So from a money standpoint, I think it's less of a concern and more so focused on passion and purpose, of course, as we've been talking about. And if possible from a business standpoint, looping them in from an equity play, you know, equity or ownership or some sort of performance-based bonus, if you're going to be doing that with those type of benefits, can be really attractive for our generations to just feel like they are really hooked in to the success of the business, and they just feel like an owner. I think what you'll find with a lot of the Gen Y and Zers, they have that entrepreneurship, you know, spirit and drive, and they wanna really feel like they own something, and they have a lot of pride in their work, and with that, you know, they're certainly willing to take less money if it's something they believe in. So I would definitely agree.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Any other thoughts on that topic?
I mean, money is definitely important. We all want to live and make sure we can afford to live. But taking a pay cut here or there to have a day off, I wouldn't turn it down, that's for sure. It would, and it honestly would depend. And it would, for me, it would be, what am I doing with my extra day? If it's just a day I'm running errands every week, probably not. But if it's a day where I'm doing something, whether it's a side job or a project I'm passionate about or something that I think is actually useful and not just using it as an extra weekend day, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I'm actually hearing a number of people from different generations that are willing to work for less, get an extra day. But what's funny is I've talked to folks that have had the four-day work week, and they end up spending more money on the extra day, so it becomes an opportunity for restraint. any other thoughts on this topic? We got one more slide. Okay, I think you guys answered it pretty well. Okay, closing slide. Then we're going to open up the line. Closing thoughts from you guys. Whether it's how to attract you guys, how to retain. Anything we've talked about today? Well, let me go around real quick. Who would like to start? Jason.
Yeah, I can start. Absolutely. I think it just comes back to, I think I've hit this point quite a few times, but just remembering that people are people. We're not just stats on the sheet. We want to know that we're making an impact and that we're important to the company and the cause and not just another stat or a number.
I have a question on that. So companies hiring somebody within your generation, and how much patience is there from a learning curve? Or is it all just about respect and here's where we're going to go and opportunity?
Are you talking about patience in terms of, like, catching people up to speed or in terms of being a millennial?
A little of both.
Personally, I think there's something to be said that every, first couple days, weeks, months on the job, there is a learning curve no matter who you are, especially if it's something new. So I like patience, but at the same time, I've also been in a lot of sink or swim environments, and there is a point where, you should know things at some juncture, and when you don't, is it becoming detrimental? Is it hurting the workforce? So there's a bit of patience that I think definitely needs to be there, but whether or not it's because you're a millennial or because it's a new job is something that I think is up in the air.
Okay. Bevna, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think for companies, in terms of attracting us, the biggest thing is for them to first look internally at their own why and their own culture. And then a lot of the attraction, retaining, and management kind of takes care of itself. So it's kind of just building the right ecosystem and then managing it, and then the right people will come and stay.
Okay, cool. Colin, you want to bring it home?
Yeah, happy to. I agree with Bhavna. I mean, I think first you got to lead with mission, in your recruiting efforts. Get people bought into the why, and, why you're doing it is so important, and certainly, be very open about how their role in the company is going to be impactful so that they feel really connected and that they have a big purpose. And next, just outline the growth. It's really important for people to, understand the trajectory and where they can go from, the point at which they join your company and their business, to really be able to see how they can ascend, what other areas for learning there are, and how they might be able to contribute. And lastly, I think just make sure that, we've said it a couple times today, that you just have this tremendous feedback loop. You create this culture of openness and vulnerability, and you show that during the interviewing process and the recruitment process, that you want to be as real and relatable as possible, and that you guys are successful as a business because you have that radical honesty displayed throughout. So I think those are the key areas for me, I think, in terms of retaining and attracting our generation.
Okay, that's really great. Sounds like that's just phenomenal. We're going to open up the line in just a minute here, but before we close this segment, I'm going to turn the recording feature off. I'm going to ask all of our listeners if you could, we have so many people on today, if everybody could please, all the listeners, could put your phones on mute, and then if you have a question, unmute your phone. Otherwise, we'll get a little unruly. Our next program, you'll see on the screen there. The next program is going to be Building and Retaining Your All-Star Team, 5 Do's and Don'ts. Larry Castle will be providing ideas on that program, so you can go ahead and sign up today, and we'll send out invites to everybody. Also, in the next couple days, we'll be sending out the slides for today's program and also an audio, which you can feel free to share with association members, friends, other individuals in your organization, because this was very valuable information and ideas that were shared. And I want to thank our panel. You guys are amazing. Again, I didn't hear any laziness things going on from any of you. Nobody's lazy. So if people think that's true about this generation, that's a misnomer. and you got to hear it first. But on the other hand, there, as it was brought up today by our panelists, everybody's an individual, and there may be some people that are lazy, and that's just who they are, but laziness needs to be defined within the culture of the organization, and being a go-getter needs to be defined, and I think that's really the key for helping to set up everybody for success. So let me turn the recording feature on. We're going to open up the line. I want to thank everybody for attending today, for those that have to go. So please stand by for one sec, and let me turn this off. We'll be right back.